tell us about yourself and about your parents and what they did?
Yes, my name is William Wiedemann. I was born at Council Bluffs, Iowa. I graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School there. My dad was also William Wiedemann, Sr., and he was an automobile dealer. My mother was a homemaker. And I have four. Was born with three brothers, four of us boys. The other three were younger than myself. My brother Bob Wiedemann was also a Navy pilot, as I was, in World War II. I continued on and went to school after graduation to Morningside College, Sioux City, Iowa, and to St. Mary's College at Arinda, California, just outside of San Francisco. I joined the Navy and went to flight school at Corpus Christi, Texas, and then I was assigned to the aircraft carrier, the USS Suwanee, CVE-27, and we covered all of the Western Pacific, everything from Okinawa on south to the Philippines and Mariana Islands. We crossed the equator, went down into the Strait of Makassar in the Celebes Seas, and took on Borneo, where the Japs had huge fuel installations. Came back and cleaned up again at Okinawa, and when the war was over, the Navy assigned me as an instrument flight instructor for 2 years at Corpus Christi, Texas. And I took a short time after that and flew for a commercial airline out of Kansas City. And after that, I came back home and got married to my wife, Ruby Sturm Wiedemann. And I've been in sales all my life. My wife and I had seven children, four boys and three girls. They're all grown and have lots of grandchildren. I live in Holly, Minnesota now, retired. My good wife, Ruby, passed away last year from cancer.
Brothers, and they also had parts in the military too. What was that like, having their other brothers in the military also, and the feelings that you all had shared on entering? It was Eldon in the military also, mm-hmm. and Bob, and Gus, was he in the military too? Could you touch briefly about what areas they were at, or was it the same time?
My brother Bob, next oldest to me, he was also a Navy pilot during World War II. And my brother Eldon was in the Coast Guard during World War II. And my youngest brother Gus, he was in the Korean War following the rest of us. He was in the Army as a infantryman.
Did you meet a lot of interesting people while you were in the military?
Yeah, one thing I did enjoy about the military was I met so many nice people and so many of the fellows that I became fast friends with as we fought side by side and spent several years out on the Pacific on the aircraft carrier, where we got to know each other, every man aboard. Got to know them personally and their names and where they came from. And they were certainly a great bunch of guys. We lost 292 men aboard the USS Suwanee aircraft carrier during combat. which was a tough thing to take. But the military life was good. We had good food, and not a big variety, because we did not have refrigeration or air conditioning on board our aircraft carrier. But after the war was over, I've come back home and met many of our old friends, and had we have a reunion. It's a USS Swanee reunion every year, so we meet all of those fellows that are left. Our numbers are getting way down. There are not too many of us left today.
Where is that at, the reunion? Where do they hold
on? Each year we have a reunion in a different state. They've mixed them up over the years, so every state has been pretty well covered, or most all the states have been covered. We haven't been to Hawaii or Alaska for a reunion, but it's always good to see the old gang together and see who they married and how many kids they got and how well they've done.
Yeah.
So, but we've certainly made a lot of good friends and got to see a lot of the world along with that.
Mm-hmm. Just need to keep in touch with them, and I'm sure you have a lot to tell them about your kids. There's 7 kids and all the grandchildren, and all the years you've been through, and still, have such a good story to tell. Are there any, main parts of during the service that you'll never forget?
Yes, our communication with those of us that are still around, mm-hmm. we write to each other, and then we make a lot of phone calls mm-hmm. back and forth. And, of course, then we have the annual reunion, where it's kind of good to see how many kids and grandkids they all have.
Leaving the military when you were all done. Do you have some feelings that stick out that you'd like to share?
Well, when I left the military, I was glad to get back home again, because I loved to hunt and fish and I'll see all my relatives, and I got to spend a lot of time back home and enjoyed all these things for many years since. Being back home is such a treat, and of course back and got to see my old girlfriend again and marry her, and life has been real good to us.
Weren't did you have to go back at all? Because from what I remember, from all the letters that were sent back and forth and all the stamps that I collected from, the World War. So you were gone also while there were still children back at home? Or am I correct? Or okay, so right out of high school, something there, what you just told me.
After I got out of high school, I felt I'd probably be drafted. So I went over to Omaha and went to the Navy recruiting offices, because I wanted to get into aviation, because I'd done some flying at the local airport in Council Bluffs when I was a student in high school. And the Navy permitted me to join the Navy Air Force, in which I did. Mm-hmm. So, and I flew for a short time F-4F Wildcat fighters, which was made by Grumman Aircraft, and then Grumman came out with a F-6F Hellcat, which was also made by Grumman. And then I was in another group for a short time, where I flew F-4U Corsairs, made by Vought Sikorsky. But most of the war, most of my hours in flying, a little over 13,000 hours, was in F-6F Hellcats out in the Pacific on the aircraft carrier.
So, and then how many years was it exactly?
Well, I joined the Navy on May 1st, 1942, and I retired from the Navy in 1947, and July 30th, 1947. I thought about making a career of it, but I was anxious to get back home and see my girlfriend and where I could go and enjoy hunting and fishing and all my home friends that I grew up with. So that was my reason for getting out of the Navy at that time.
So Grandma was your girlfriend before you left, and then you came back to her, and then you got married shortly after?
Oh, yeah. Oh. After I came back from the service, I worked for a time, and one of my old schoolmates, Raymond Sturm, was one of my classmates in high school, and he had a sister named Ruby. And finally I met her through Ray, and we decided to date, became steady dates, and went together for quite some time. We got married on July 17th, 1954. At St. Patrick's Church in Council Bluffs, Iowa.
That would be 7 years after you got out of the service. Mm-hmm. 7 years you were together. That's wonderful. And then you got seven beautiful children, and that's where I came from. Well, Grandpa, is there any other feelings you'd like to share about the service in general altogether?
I think the Navy's a great place for a young person, man or woman, to join. The money is good, the food is good, and it's a good life. You have a lot of physical programs to work on, and you get a good education from the Navy. It's something you can use later on in life anywhere. Of course, coming back home is one of the things I have enjoyed. Not only having my own kids to grow up with, but and see them, where I would, if I'd have stayed in the Navy, I wouldn't have been able to see my family as much as I have in the past here. And then I also got 25 grandchildren, which is a real blessing. It's always nice to have them. They're all a great, great bunch of kids. Every one of them are just couldn't ask for better. As a matter of fact, I got one sitting right here beside me, interviewing me. And Natasha Wiedemann is my son John's daughter. And She's now going to Morehead State University, and she's just a very smart girl and very beautiful. And so what more could a fella ask for in life than to have all these great-grandchildren?
And you can take it as far as you want. And that is, how would you like to be remembered?
Well, as far as I'd like to be remembered, I'd like to be remembered as having been a good grandpa, and my lovely wife that I was married to all those years was a great grandma too. We both have not only loved and enjoyed our own children so much, but We've had a lot of fun with our grandchildren growing up, and Grandma always cooked and made cookies for them, and always had treats and after school, and we certainly have and enjoyed a blessed life, I'll say that. I'm thankful that I was given an opportunity to participate in the war, and that the week that America came out number one. I think war is an awful thing. I saw so many of my buddies killed in action, and some came back handicapped. I hope this war that we're considering to go into with Iraq, I just feel that we'll be able to get in there quick and get out quick without the loss of lives. I feel that maybe it is a necessary thing to get into, but it's going to be a horrible tragedy if we start losing men over there and women. War is really hell on earth, believe me. And I think anybody that's experienced it before would agree with me wholeheartedly on that. We don't like to see people killed. So I hope President George Walker Bush will make the right move here and get us in and out quick.
Thank you, Grandpa. I would just like to comment that I feel that I'm very lucky today to have you sitting with me here today, and that you came out such a miraculous war veteran and went through all that.
Well, I thank you for the nice interview, and I thank God for bringing me back home alive and all in one piece. Thank you, Natasha.
Okay, you can just start that again.
Yeah.
You don't have to sit close to it.
Oh, that's...
So you started flying...
When I went to Morningside College at Sioux City, Iowa, there was a little airport just across the river, and I went over there and met some fellows I knew that were students over there. They were students also at Morningside College, and they went over there to take flying lessons. So I went over and I signed up and started taking flying lessons, and we flew all small planes, like little Cubs and Taylor craft, and so I'd got in quite a few hours of flying, several hundred hours, and I flew INF Wacos and UPF Wacos. Now these were both biplanes, and made down in Texas. They called them Wacos instead of Wacos. But so I got in a good deal of time, flight time, in aircraft before I got and joined the Navy.
So you think that the portions that you had to do with flying while you were in the service, that was pretty comfortable for you to handle those planes and...
Yeah, I really enjoyed flying Navy planes. I had a chance to fly a number of other Navy planes after the war, and flying has always been something I have always enjoyed. However, I flew a commercial airline for a short time. It wasn't as much fun as flying a fighter. Because a fighter, you're always on the move, is very maneuverable. You really get around fast. Sitting on a commercial airliner as a pilot, when I was a co-pilot, you sit for hours just flying straight ahead from point to point, and there's not you don't maneuver your aircraft very much, like you do when you're in a fighter plane. So. I got a little bit bored with that type of flying, and that's why I gave it up. The money was pretty good, but the job was a good job. But it was just sitting there flying an airplane straight ahead hour after hour, which got pretty boring.
Mm-hmm. Were you by yourself in each of these? Were you by yourself in each of these planes? The size of them, like
in all the fighter planes, I was my own, just a single pilot, just a pilot was the only myself. Mm-hmm. And we were also our radio man and our gunner, and we had a plotting board at our knees where we did all our own plotting and navigation, because when you left your carrier, the carrier kept moving. And when you left, they told us that they would be going at a certain direction on the map, and at so many knots per hour. And we would go over for 2 hours, usually ran on a strike, and then we had to come back 2 hours. So we had to know where our carrier was going to be when we came back, because the carrier kept moving all that time at 25 knots an hour. And that ocean's big out there, and you don't have anything to look at, no dead reckoning. So you have to look for your carrier out on that large expanse of the ocean. So you better make sure that you find your carrier. So through navigating ourselves, and you had to watch your watch, and your time had to be precise, because you would run out of fuel if you stayed out too long. And another thing, when you came back, that carrier was in a lot different place than where you left it. So your navigation had to be right on the money. So the only thing there was to see out there was your carrier, or a lot of water if you had to, that you could land in, and not very likely you might not get picked up.
Did you have an incident where you had any plane troubles, or?
Yeah, we were off the coast of Japan, and I picked up some ack-ack. My plane went down. In the water, I landed it safely on the water, and because the engine had quit, And I had three of my teammates that were flying with me. And so when they saw me go down, they orbited over my plane, sank right away. And I got out and jumped into a rubber life raft and sat there. And they orbited over me to keep the Japs from seeing me. And apparently the Japs did see me, because They sent several motor launches out with a number of men on each one to pick me up. And as they did, my fellow teammates strafed those Japanese motor launches and sank them, along with the Japanese people that were in the military that were in the motor launches that were going to take me in. And they sent in a destroyer from our screen, U.S. destroyer, the USS Daly, came in to pick me up. And they dropped a cargo net over the side for me to climb up. And as I got up on, as I put my feet on the deck, there was a fellow standing right in front of me. And his name was Ralph Gaines. Ralph Gaines was from Missouri Valley, Iowa. And he said, "What the heck are you doing out here in the middle of the Pacific?" And I told him I was sitting out there waiting a long time for you to come by and pick me up. Why didn't you get here sooner? I'm getting cold. So Ralph and I had a lot of good laughs over that. And then the doctor came up and he said, "You're cold?" And I said, "I sure am." He said, "Well, I brought you a little bottle of brandy to warm you up." And sure enough, he pulled out of his pocket about a half a pint, a bottle of brandy, and gave me a couple of good swigs. And he said, "That'll warm you up." And he said, "I'm getting cold too." So he drank the rest of Dr. Crawford drank the rest of the bottle.
That's good.
Oh, just I was going to grab a Kleenex. Yeah, thank you. Well, you ask about Navy food. Our carriers that were built prior to World War II, and they did not have refrigeration or air conditioning. So it got pretty warm sleeping down in the hold at nights. On our food, because of lack of refrigeration, we had to use all canned or dry products. We had Spam. 3 meals a day, morning, noon, and night, and because it was a canned product. Our eggs were dehydrated egg powder that was provided from Acoma Foods out of Berryville, Arkansas. The eggs were put in trays of water at night. The powdered eggs were put in trays of water at night, and they fluffed up during the night, and in the morning they'd take them off of the trays and slap them on the grill and warm them up. And the Spam was cooked on the grill also. We had potatoes 2 or 3 times a day. These were dehydrated potato powder is what it was. And so we had all our potatoes were mashed potatoes. They were provided from some big potato factory up in Idaho. We had lots of Navy beans. We had Navy beans, they dried Navy beans, and they made soup with them. So we had Navy bean soup 3 times a day. It was optional. You could eat and have as much of the baby Navy beans you wanted. There was no meat in them, very little seasoning. Twice a year, Christmas and Easter, we did have canned chickens. These were about 48-ounce cans of chicken provided by Blue Star Foods out of Council Bluffs, Iowa. And in each can was a chicken. And other than that, that was the only fresh meat that we got in the years we were out in the Pacific. It was all Spam, and on those 2 holidays we had chicken. So, but they did provide us with coffee to drink several times a day, and then they did do some baking. We had some baked foods like pancakes, and a few homemade slices of bread once in a while. The flour got weevils in it, so you'd get a slice of bread, and you always had to hold it up to the light and pick the weevils out before you ate the bread. So the flour didn't keep very good at sea. They had big barrels. Flour came in big wooden barrels. So, and our showers were all just fresh water right out of the Pacific Ocean, salty. So when you, after you showered, you felt sticky all over you from the salty water. We did have a small desalinizing machine that provided with fresh water. It boiled the salt out, but it was just a small unit. But it did provide us with enough fresh water for drinking and for cooking and for coffee, but not enough to ever shower with. So that was one hindrance, was that we didn't have any type of air conditioning on board. Lots of nights we climbed out and slept just with our bunk bag and slept on the deck of the aircraft carrier because it was so hot down in the hold to sleep. So that was one of the good things about the good old Navy that we all enjoyed. It was all those lifetime experiences. Our last stop in the Pacific was at Nagasaki. There, our military had dropped the atomic bomb on Nagasaki, which is a seaport town of Japan. They lowered 12 of us guys in a motor launch, and were taken to go to had us go to shore at Nagasaki, and to see what the damage that the atomic bomb had done. And we waded in to the mess that was there, and sometimes the ashes were almost up to our hips, that we had just light ash. The bomb, from the bomb, the heat was so intense that it just melted buildings and destroyed everything. They had, at Nagasaki, they had some buildings where the beams of the building and the columns were 18, some of them 20, 24 inch columns and beams in these big buildings, and they melted them so they looked like a piece of ribbon candy or wet spaghetti. It was just, they just had melted them down to, for the heat was that intense. And there was, we only saw one human being there. The most of the local people had probably, the bomb had cremated them, I'm sure. We didn't see any signs of bones or anything like that, any human life, except one, we saw one old man, elderly man, and he was wading through some of the debris, looking for, to see if he could find somebody. And, of course, we didn't understand what he was trying to say, but other than he was shivering like he was cold. And one of our guys gave him his cap, put it on his head for him, and helped him. But we didn't have any food because we just came over on from our carrier to the motor launch. So we weren't able to help him to speak of. But then our admiral on board our carrier, the USS Swanee, when the motor launch come back, he sent the ship's doctor inland to see if they could find this old man and give him some food and drink and medication. And so they weren't able to bring him aboard the carrier because he was in pretty bad shape. So it was too bad, but they had to leave him. But they made sure he was warm and comfortable and had food and water. So that was the end of the war, that atomic bomb, I'm sure it saved losing a lot more lives. Otherwise, the war had probably gone on for maybe even years longer. So that was the end. Yeah. After that, then we pulled up the anchor and headed for home. Well, we headed for the Hawaiian Islands first, where we stopped and took on food and fuel and and more medication and all the needs of that, so we were able to make it back to the States, to San Diego. So it was good to get back home again, back on U.S. soil. What a blessing.